Welcome, everyone. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger with Natural News, here with a GMO update for you. And I'm joined by none other than Jeffrey Smith, the Executive Director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. They're at responsibletechnology.org, and Jeffrey has all kinds of news for us today, and much of it is good news about how we are achieving victory against genetically modified organisms, genetically engineered crops and foods. So, Jeffrey, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It's great to hear from you. I think the last time we interviewed you was before you took the big trip to India, and you've been on a whirlwind tour around the world, it seems. Can you give us a brief update of what you saw, what you found, and why that matters to us here in our fight against GMOs in North America?
Well, I have been to India, China, Vietnam, Canada, but I'll tell you what's really heating up is what's happening in the United States. Now, China is still pushing GMOs forward. In India, there's a huge, huge uprising against GMOs, with states going against national governments and people within the national government going against each other. Vietnam is interested in introducing GMOs next year, and we're trying very hard to get information that shows that the information that they've gotten from Monsanto is all false. But what's happening in the United States, I think, is really leading the pack, because we have created collectively a buzz on GMOs that is unprecedented. And we see the early signs of a coming tipping point, which I think your listeners are going to be very excited to hear the details about.
Yeah, that's very exciting. There's lots of good news. You mentioned to me off the air some of the signs. Can you share those with listeners? What are these early signs of a tipping point fast approaching here?
Well, let's take it historically in the recent past. I've been crisscrossing the country since 2003 when I released Seeds of Deception, and I've been talking to people and seeing the responses, etc. At the end of 2009, Supermarket News boldly predicted, and they're a food trade journal read by executives in the food industry, they boldly predicted that 2010 would see an unprecedented upsurge of consumer awareness and concern about GMOs, and said it might in fact rise to the level of trans fats and carbs and extra salt and sugar, which have been basically defining the food industry's product offerings for the past few decades.
Yes.
And I wrote back and said, you know, if it rises to the level of trans fats and carbs and things like that, unlike those, GMOs offer no consumer benefit. We could see a tipping point that'll drive all GMOs out of the market. In fact, that's what happened in Europe in 1999, when within 1 week, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients because they had become a marketing liability. As happened in the United States with bovine growth hormone, kicked recently out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Dan, and most American dairies because it had become a marketing liability. So if even a small percentage of shoppers refuse to buy products that contain GMOs, if Kraft marketing departments saw a drop in market share and could trace it to resistance against GMOs, and they've already removed GMOs in their European and Japanese brands, so they'll know that populations can all of a sudden turn on GMOs. If they see that trend here, since there's no consumer benefits, they will simply eliminate GMOs, and quickly, before they lose more market share. So when they predicted this in Supermarket News, I actually found a fulfillment of that prediction immediately. Starting in 2010, in the beginning, I was talking to people at conferences, and they were starting to relay to me in-depth details about the health dangers of GMOs and levels of activity that I had no idea were going on in this country. Groups of parents of autistic kids were getting together and saying, no GMOs for our kids. A lot of healthcare practitioners were saying, no GMOs for our patients. Farmers were getting together. Health food stores were promoting it. There were pockets of activism like I had never seen, and that to me was a real strong indication of a coming non-GMO revolution. And then in the summer of 2010, the FDA said they wanted to approve genetically engineered salmon, and that created a complete tumult of media coverage. And then the sugar beets and alfalfa lawsuits came out, hit the news. And then in the beginning of 2011, the USDA boldly approved week after week, alfalfa, sugar beets, and then an ethanol corn, and the entire organic industry, the natural products industry, and just conscious shoppers in general were appalled. So when I, since then, since January when those approvals were taking place, I've been asking groups, I said, okay, raise your hand if you were really upset in January about the approval of alfalfa and sugar beets, and nearly everyone's hand goes up. And then I say, how many of you were even aware when the USDA originally approved sugar beets and alfalfa a few years ago, one or two hands go up. So I say it's the same event, a few years apart, but in the first time it went completely under the radar screen, and now millions of people are upset, millions of people are engaged, millions of people want to avoid GMOs.
And isn't it fair to say, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, because there's a lot to talk about.
I was just going to say, isn't it fair to say that the only reason people are still buying GMOs is largely because they don't know they're buying GMOs, because it's not yet labeled, but there are even efforts underway to make sure that they are labeled, correct?
Yes. In fact, 53% of Americans, according to a New York Times CBS poll, said that they would refuse genetically modified products if they were labeled, if they knew that which products were genetically modified. Now, in my opinion, we only need about 5% of U.S. shoppers avoiding GM ingredients to demonstrate a drop in market share and create a tipping point. So if 9 out of 10 of those Americans that say they would refuse GMOs were lying, we still have enough to create a tipping point. But what's been happening this year is so much activity built upon last year that we are struggling to keep up. There are so many non-GMO activities, non-GMO opportunities, and labeling is just one of them. There's a Right to Know march trying to force labeling going on from New York to Washington, D.C. There's rallies all over the country, especially on World Food Day, October 16th. There's already been rallies that I participated in Denver, in L.A. There was rallies in other places. There's a ballot initiative that is expected to go on the ballot in California in 2012 for the November election. And this alone could create a tipping point because companies realize that they would never want to say contains GMOs on their product label,
right?
Because most Americans would want to avoid them. And so if this law passes, companies are not going to make one label for California and another label for the rest of the states. They're simply going to remove GMOs here like they've done in other countries. So this idea for the ballot initiative was an epiphany by a woman named Pam Larry, a grandmother from Chico, California. She got it on January 20th. She then started to do some research, put a website together, announced it in March. On March 10th. She was one voice. 6 months later, there were nearly 70 groups in California organized to try and get the petitions gathered if this thing gets introduced. And so there's been a lot of buzz around that. There's also been buzz by a lot of organic and natural companies that were trying to get the FDA to pay attention to labeling. There's like, I was just in Expo East, which was in Baltimore, which is the natural food products, natural food industry conference for the East Coast. It happens every year. And I've been going every year to both Expo East and Expo West. And every year, the buzz on GMOs has gotten more and more. This year, it was over the top. I went to the Organic Summit, which was the day before the Expo. There were two major meetings on GMOs. There were working groups that had been working on it, all sorts of aspects of GMOs. And the following day, 5 one-hour meetings. The next day, 2 one-hour meetings. I learned that 5,500 products had been enrolled in the non-GMO project. There's been a huge awakening and upsurge about GMOs. I looked at the front cover of Natural Foods Merchandiser, which is goes to the retail stores in the natural food space. It was all about retailers starting a revolution against GMOs, people wearing buttons against GMOs. It was a complete a buzz that was just amazing.
So
within the natural food industry.
What is your sense about the food executives there? Are they... Obviously, they're hearing this message. Are they gearing up now to go non-GMO when they have to? Or is there any talk about that behind the scenes?
Absolutely. The fastest growing label claim in the natural food industry is GMO-free or non-GMO. But it's become the third fastest growing claim in products sold in grocery stores. So even outside the natural food space, you see non-GMO as very, very rapidly gaining traction. And I've spoken to a number of executives within the natural food, within the mainstream food industry, and was surprised at how sensitive they are. I talked to one regional supermarket, I'll leave their name out of it for the time being, and the guy returned my call saying, yes, I read your book, and I'm excited about talking with you, and yes, we think a non-GMO revolution is coming, and we're taking a position against salmon, for example. So these were people that I wasn't expecting to get that level of receptivity. And I had to talk to another regional supermarket 2 years ago, and they said, yes, it does seem like a rejection against GMOs is in the air in the food industry. And I've just left a message at a Fortune 500 company earlier today. I spoke to a brand manager and explained to them that I wanted to go into their offices and give them this data, which suggests that we're at the early stages of a tipping point, so that they could make preparations now to eliminate GMOs if they chose to, in order not to be caught once the GMO revolution happens.
Yeah, pretty soon it's going to be an issue of they don't want to be left behind. I mean, who wants to be the last one to eliminate GMOs? But folks, exactly. If you're listening, look, there's so much good news happening here. And as you can hear, Jeffrey Smith is one of the hardest working individuals I've ever met. He is traveling nonstop. He is on the front lines of this battle, fighting for your right to know what's in your food and to get GMOs out of the food supply. And his efforts in the Institute for Responsible Technology needs your support to continue this fight and to achieve the victory that now appears to be within reach. Finally, along these lines, I want to say to you right here, to those listening and to you, Jeffrey, that as a fundraising effort, Natural News is now pledging to you $15,000 in matching funds to match donations raised by Natural News readers. So, folks, if you want to contribute to this fundraising effort and help support the IRT's efforts in the years ahead, we could have major victories in 2012, and within a couple years, we could really, really see perhaps GMOs banished from North American food supplies. But to contribute to this, folks, go to this website, responsibletechnology.org/friends. That's just friends, plural. FRIENDS. And for every dollar that you donate, Natural News will match it up to $15,000. Together, we can raise $30,000 for the IRT, or perhaps even more. So that's my pledge to you today, Jeffrey, to support your work.
That is fantastic, Mike. That is really great. You have been a fantastic supporter in the past. You gave a matching fund grant last year, which really helped us a great deal getting started in this year, and that is just wonderful. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate the energy of a lot of your readers that come up to me and say, oh, you're Jeffrey Smith. Yeah, I read about you in Natural News. And I saw the video you did with Mike Adams, or I watched Mike's wonderful rap video, which I love, by the way. I played in a lot of conferences to hundreds of people. Yeah, this is great. And I want to tell you, we will be able to put that money to fantastic use. Let me tell you a little bit about our successes, but also our struggles. I mean, right now we have a lot of low-hanging non-GMO fruit, and we need to harvest it. There's hundreds of people that have signed up to join our Tipping Point Network, which is local and national action groups. So we have over 100 groups that are in the forming stages or action stages right now, where people can do local outreach, show films, have potlucks, table at events, etc. And we have hundreds of people that have signed up to be focused specifically on certain targeted demographic groups, parents, healthcare practitioners, those that are patients of certain diseases that may be related to GMOs, to the campuses and schools, to inner city, to the non-English language speaking groups in the U.S. And so we haven't had even the staff time to be able to shepherd this energy so that these groups that are ready to go can put their attention on these really receptive and powerful demographics. There's right. groups that want to be focused on the religious and spiritual. I mean, there are groups out there, some major religions, that don't like GMOs, but they've never mobilized their purchasing power to have the impact that it can have, which could be instant removal of GMOs from a major religion. So we are very excited about this. We are actually now engaging more and more volunteers. We have a number of volunteer staff around the country. We have, as I say, building these groups, and we've set up the electronic infrastructure on our website. It's just a matter now of applying a little more staff time to actually make sure that these plans which are in place can be implemented.
You know, that's one of the things that people really need to realize, and I think Natural News readers and listeners do, by and large. They realize that activism takes resources, it takes organization, it takes staff. I mean, we're overwhelmed too. I can't even hire enough staffers to answer the phone and handle all the interview requests and handle all the questions and so on. We do the best we can given the resources we have, because we're not a wealthy organization by any means. But it's important for people to understand that groups like yours, Jeffrey, the IRT, will never receive funding from the corporate giants, you know, big agriculture. You will never receive money from the big corporate advertisers. You'll never receive money from the USDA, like a government grant or something like that. This is truly, in every way, a grassroots funding effort to cause grassroots change. And it's only going to come from the grassroots. It's never going to come from upstairs down, because they don't want this change. They've been resisting this. That's why your efforts are so crucial, Jeffrey.
And, you know, I think that having a matching fund helps people realize better that every dollar that they give makes a difference. I know, like, people may think, well, if I just have $15, it's not going to be much. It's not worth getting online and all that stuff. But if they think, oh, 15 becomes 30, and et cetera, et cetera. But even the 15, even without the matching fund, that's how we actually exist. That's how we have the staff that we have around the country. We have someone focusing on strategic relationships. We have someone focusing on media. We've got a team on our website. We've got people organizing events. We have people translating materials into Spanish. We have people working on the ground with these different groups. So we have all these around the country, and we're supported pretty much entirely by the goodwill of individuals and a few foundations and a few companies that are non-GMO companies, but as you say, not the big ones.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad to hear that you have a broad base of support. Let me answer the question that might be in the minds of those who are considering donating. And again, that URL is responsibletechnology.org/friends. And if you go there, again, it's matching funds up to $15,000 will be matched by us, Natural News. But what kinds of things will this money go to, Jeffrey? I mean, what will happen over the next, let's say, 12 months that really matters in this fight for you know, GMO truth and ultimately getting rid of it out of the food supply?
You know, that's a great question, and part of me puts the brakes on. I am, as you probably know, and you could probably guess, I am watched carefully by the PR firms of Monsanto and the big biotech companies.
Oh, you're right.
And if what I've done is, you'll notice I didn't mention how many staff and exactly who they were. If you go to our website, we don't list the staff members and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because they try and take every piece of information and use it against us. And they're completely unscrupulous, and they completely just search and wait and look for opportunities, hunt, try and figure out things about me, and they get things wrong all the time, and I don't bother correcting because they just have those wrong ideas circulating. So we have created 3 or 4 campaigns, very powerful messaging, that we're now organizing. We're now building the materials, the videos, the brochures, the television commercials, things like that, the mailers that can go out. We have campaigns, 3 or 4 different messaging campaigns, and that we are putting together. And I don't want to speak about them yet until they're launched, because I don't want to give the biotech industry any
sure.
heads up whatsoever.
Yeah.
But we're creating the brochures, the mailers, the videos, the YouTube pieces, the TV commercials, the PSAs, so that if the information gets out in a big way, we're very confident it'll change the eating behaviors, which can change the market. Again, well, this is, you know, GMOs may be one of the worst health and environmental catastrophes we're facing, but it's one of the easiest of those serious problems to fix, because it only requires It does not require policy change. It requires people changing their behavior, which moves the market. Now, on top of that, we have this potential for making labeling required in California, which is a policy change, and if it happened, it will do the trick on its own. So we're going to be very carefully watching that and making sure. California has always been a target geographic region for us because of the receptivity there. So we already have people with offices there from IRT, and we're going to put a lot of consumer education on the ground there.
Yeah, you know, what you said is really important. The GMOs, I believe, I agree with you that they are the greatest environmental threat or catastrophe of our time, or perhaps a catastrophe waiting to happen. I mean, lots of things could happen in the years ahead as these genes create unintended effects throughout the food supply, throughout the human population, through perhaps with effects of infertility and so on. We don't even have to get into all those. But what's important for people to understand is that you, by being on the front lines of this battle, so to speak, you put yourself at risk. You are willing to be criticized, and you are criticized. You are attacked, just like I'm attacked for telling the truth about things like vaccines. And these companies out there, they will spend millions of dollars to try to find out who your staff members are and then try to infiltrate your staff members or pressure them to give them intelligence behind the scenes, things like that. I mean, I know you don't talk about this, and I'm not asking you to, but I just want people listening to know that this is not an easy battle to fight, and that you have great courage in moving forward with this day after day in the interests of food honesty, food freedom, and also just good health for the American people.
Well, thank you, Mike. You know, it's interesting. People have said to me that I'm courageous, and My response is this, and it may be a matter of definition, but to me, I think someone who is courageous, if they have a lot of fear and they step through it anyway, and even though I know about the mechanisms of the biotech industry and the threats, and they do try and discredit me all over the world, I have no fear. This is my assignment. And this is the assignment of many people now. People just feel like this is what they need to do. And I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and it's working. I know it's working. I'm getting feedback from people that heard me years and years ago that I've never heard about or heard from since, but it's changed their lives. I was at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, for example, in August, and I gave a talk, and there was a standing ovation and all this great appreciation, and afterwards people came up to me, and I found so many of these people said, you know, I heard you back in 2006 when you gave the keynote, and I started prescribing non-GMO diets to all my patients and changed my own lifestyle and my own diet, and I never talked to these people before or since, and I just didn't have any idea that for 5 years they had been influencing thousands of patients and their own lives. The same thing happened at the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. I talked to one doctor there who said she's prescribing non-GMO diets to every patient. I actually went to her offices, interviewed 7 patients. It was amazing the changes that they had when they switched to a non-GMO diet. And it turns out she had just heard me speak, you know, 5 years earlier at the AAM conference there. And the seeds that we're planting, you know, our books, our materials. Another story, I was at the Natural Products Expo in Seattle a year or so ago, and I was interviewing health food store owners, and one person was just going into all such details about the health risks, describing it better than I do, and I was so impressed, and I said, how did you learn about all this stuff? And he said, well, I just saw a video online, and then I got back to the store and realized, oh, we have your non-GMO education center, and there was the video in there, so I started watching World According to Monsanto and Future of Food and reading your books, and then I watched them all again and I read the books a second time, and now I've been just telling everyone who comes in the store about GMOs. And the guy was completely on fire, his face was red, his eyes were wide, he was totally turned on to the issue. And again, I had never met him before. We just put the information out. The truth is powerful, and this is what's happening. It's like, you know, Woody Allen says it's 90% of success is just showing up. And I feel like since I've been doing this for 15 years, on the road for 8 years, and getting the information out, somehow, I just don't even think about it. It you know, our institute is making a huge impact. And I think we have convinced more people in the world to avoid GMOs than any other group. And that's, in fact, what we think would be the solution to the problem. So now we're training people to speak on GMOs. We're cloning ourselves, and so to speak. I do full-day workshops. I just did one in Petaluma, California, a couple of weeks ago. We've done them all over the country. We're doing one in L.A. at the end of October. We're doing it in San Francisco in the second weekend in November. We've taught 700 people how to speak on GMOs, either in four-part webinars or full-day seminars. And we have, you know, it's like people, it's what was shocking, Mike, is this. We charged, you know, money for these workshops, and people paid us to learn how to speak on GMOs. You know, we weren't expecting more than a couple of dozen people for our first, we had a five-part webinar last summer, summer before last, and we had 112 people sign up. And the next time it was 164. And the next time was also like about 150. Each time we do it, we're getting huge numbers of people who are then become speakers. They write articles. They get interviewed in the newspaper or radio, and they're getting back to me. It's like we are seeing a revolution, and it's a knowledge-based revolution. The GMOs are being distributed in the U.S. based on consumer ignorance, and they'll be kicked out based on consumer knowledge. So we're just creating the packets of knowledge.
You're exactly right. It is a revolution, and now the GMO pushers out there are fighting a retreating battle, and they claim to be operating out of so-called science. Oh, biotechnology is scientific. Can you address the number one excuse that the biotech industry puts out there that they claim supports GMOs, which is they claim GMOs will feed the world. We're going to feed the world. What do you say to that, Jeffrey?
Well, obviously, they're not designed to feed the world. There's a number of flaws in the argument. First of all, the biggest flaw is that increased yield, will feed the world. Well, it turns out the experts agree that yield is not the problem. We have more food per person than any time in human history, and yet there's still a billion people that go hungry every night. The problem is, even if yield was the answer, GMOs do not increase yield. If you look at the Union of Concerned Scientists report, Failure to Yield, GMOs on average reduce yield. In fact, the most comprehensive evaluation of how to feed the world, the ISTAT report, which was authored by more than 400 scientists, signed on by 58 countries, sponsored by the UN, UNESCO, UNEP, WHO, WTO, etc., It said that GMOs in their current state have nothing to offer to feed the world, create sustainable agriculture, or alleviate poverty. And so the experts in the world dismissed it. And I was at a meeting in Des Moines a year ago, right before the World Food Prize. It was a group of people who were experts at feeding the world, and they had just been given a talk by the co-chairman of this ISTAT report, Hans Herren, who was a World Food Prize recipient. And he described that GMOs were completely irresponsible for this particular tactic. The next morning, Secretary Vilsack got a chance to speak. I asked him a question from the audience about GMOs, explaining the American Academy of Environmental Medicine urges all doctors to prescribe non-GMO diets. They don't increase yield. There's all sorts of evidence here and there. Would he be willing to look at this hard data and consider putting GMOs back into the laboratory, in which case there was a big applause. Well, he evidently didn't pick up on the nature of the meeting, because after describing, you know, his sort of song and dance about, well, he has two sons, and one's organic and one's conventional, and he has to figure out how to support both, he paused and said, well, you know, a lot of people are concerned about the growing population, the need to feed the world, at which point this very courteous, very supportive group of PhDs and experts started to slowly, quietly hiss and boo. It was in a complete turning point in the conversation. It was the last question that he had. He had been received very well, very nice applause. Here, these experts were booing him. And he immediately got out of it and said, well, I was just telling you what other people are saying, and then quickly got onto the other subject and then got off the stage. But these were the experts in feeding the world basically saying, don't give us that crap. We know it's not true. You shouldn't try and pretend it's true. But the next day, Vilsack was speaking at the World Food Prize, which was sponsored by the GMO industry, and went back into feeding the world. So he was willing to give the lie as long as the audience was willing to applaud for it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they always have their lying mantras that they will roll out anytime they can get away with it. But let me bring this back to the environment. And first, want to remind those listening that your support really is needed on this. So please consider offering some support. Remember that Natural News is matching your donations up to $15,000. And we will publish proof of the total and final donations to the Institute for Responsible Technology, the URL where you can offer a donation, even as small as $5, $10, or something larger if you're able to afford that and want to invest that in our collective future. That URL is responsibletechnology.org/friends. Also want to mention, you know, folks, there are not a lot of topics where you can really get traction, you know. Like, we're not going to shut down Big Pharma anytime soon. You know, we're not going to reform the FDA anytime soon. We're not going to stop the wars and the military-industrial complex anytime soon. Maybe that's a good long-term plan, but that's not on the radar for short-term success. But the things that are within our grasp are issues like fluoride in the water and GMOs. We can win this GMO battle. Winning it will require your support. It will require resources. That's why we're donating to it. That's why we're interviewing Jeffrey. And I know that's why you're spending your time here with us, Jeffrey, even though you probably have 1,000 things to do today, and I appreciate it. But folks, you can get traction on this issue. We can see a victory. 5 years from now, we could look back and each of us can say, wow, I was part of that victory, and we no longer have GMOs on the shelves here in America. I was part of that. You can join that effort right now by donating to the Institute for Responsible Technology. Now, getting to environment, Jeffrey, do you see any trend among environmentalists to start speaking out about GMOs or genetic pollution as an environmental issue? Because there's been a lot of focus on CO2. Is there any shift to include GMOs in some of the alerts now?
Well, the major environmental groups in the United States, unfortunately, have never taken this up. So, you know, the ones that, or if they have, it's been very, very lightweight. And that's been a real concern because that's where a lot of money is that could have been used to shut GMOs down a long time ago. But there are some stirrings going on. There's more and more discussion of the environmental problems because there's more research coming out. I think from the start, the biggest problem with GMOs was the irreversibility of contamination of the gene pool. So the genes already released by Monsanto years ago can theoretically outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. As long as the corn species exists on Earth, there'll probably be a small level of contamination, hopefully it's small, that will persist unless some science fiction future comes and we can flip on the goggles and get the ray gun and shoot the GMOs out of existence. But today, we don't have that ability. So like the FDA trying to introduce genetically engineered salmon, that got a lot of environmentalists concerned because studies had shown that in other GM fish, the salmon that had been engineered for faster growth by Canadian scientists, when they were put into tanks and there was less food than necessary, they started attacking and killing and eating their competitors, whether they were regular fish or frankenfish, and they were actually moving in the tank into areas far more aggressively than the normal salmon, so they were willing to go and be quite bullish, so to speak. So if they had been approved, and they still might be, and they escaped into the ocean, they might be a roving band of voracious mutant frankenfish killing off competitors. Right. And this is a way that we could end up losing salmon. Now, there's mosquitoes that were released in the Cayman Islands and in Malaysia. Now, the purpose of it was to stop dengue fever or malaria. So the purpose was laudable, but the tactics were horrendous because if there's a problem, how in the world are you going to do a recall? So it's the same way in the environment. Now, not only is the contamination problem, but now we're getting super weeds because there's so much spraying with Roundup. There's now weeds that don't die with small doses, so they're doing much larger doses, which is causing all sorts of havoc in the soil bacteria, in the in the plants, which it helps chelate the nutrients and make them unavailable to the plant, which makes them unavailable to the animals. So we have nutrient-deficient animals. Now we have new information showing that Roundup is linked to birth defects and has since the 80s, but the information was covered up by Monsanto and the regulatory authorities. And there's now evidence in the laboratory as well as correlational support that people who are exposed to Roundup have higher rates of birth defects. Then we have the information about Roundup is persistent in the environment for months or years, and the BT toxin that's produced by the corn and cotton, that's also causing devastation in soil bacteria. It also gets washed into the marine ecosystems and affects the caddisfly, and it may be affecting the bees, and it may be affecting other organisms. So people are starting to see more and more some of the studies that should have gone on long before GMOs were introduced, but now as they're slowly surfacing, people are putting a picture together of a runaway infant technology that can be changing everything. In fact, I've talked to one agronomist who said, you go out and you look at a cornfield where Roundup was sprayed, and then you look at a cornfield next door where it's biological systems, and after a rain, all the water washes off the Roundup field and gets absorbed into the other one. So now we're having flooding all over the Midwest. We had huge flooding in Iowa. Can we blame Monsanto's Roundup for compactifying the soil by killing off certain beneficial bacteria, which creates the soil as a sponge, and it's no longer that way, it becomes hardened? There's all sorts of things that could be linked to GMOs now that they're being used in over 100 million acres with their associated chemicals.
Well, that's why it's so frustrating that environmentalists aren't more active on this issue. I mean, I don't want to point fingers at them, but if you're a true environmentalist, and I count myself as a protector of the planet, someone who really cares about the environment, you've got to go with the issues that really, really matter. And GMOs have to be near the top or at the top of that list, it would seem.
Absolutely. But I tell you, the thing that's gotten traction with my audiences, and because I'm focused on tipping point, I want to change behavior. When I think about an environmentalist, I think it's really easy with time to get someone concerned about GMOs, angry at Monsanto, angry at the EPA, FDA, USDA. But that same person who's concerned about the environment may then go and eat a corn chip that's genetically modified and not think about it.
Yeah, right.
But if someone realizes that 93% of pregnant women in Canada that were tested had BT toxin, an insecticide produced by Monsanto's corn, circulating in their blood. And these pregnant women, 80% of these pregnant women had the same insecticidal toxin circulating in the cord blood of their unborn fetuses.
Incredible.
This BT toxin has been linked to allergic reactions, toxic reactions, tissue damage in animals. Farm workers who pick BT cotton are getting allergic reactions and rashes and itching rashes all over their skins. They allow animals to graze on the cotton plants after harvest. Thousands of animals died. I visited one village where all of their buffalo died after a single day grazing on the BT cotton plants. These BT toxin is in our food supply. It's in Monsanto wants to put it more of it into our sweet corn. It's already into our corn chips. And the only human feeding study ever conducted showed that genes transfer to the DNA of gut bacteria living inside our intestines with soy. If that happens with corn, it might turn our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, meaning that if you eat that corn chip, you may end up producing BT toxin inside your own intestines day after day thereafter. Now, this is the kind of information that changes people's behavior.
Yeah, I'm not sure that people really get the impact of that. I mean, theoretically, I don't know that this has been proven yet, but it's certainly feasible that by eating GMO corn products today, you could become a human herbicide or pesticide chemical factory in your own gut. And that's just astonishing. And it could explain a lot of what's happening out there with just crazy onset of freaky autoimmune disorders or diseases. I mean, again, I'm not saying it's been proven yet, but it certainly is a scary territory, and it certainly hasn't been proven safe.
I mean, exactly.
It's a grand experiment.
Your wording, Mike, is perfect. We know that when GMOs were introduced, multiple chronic illnesses in the United States jumped from 7% to 13% in 9 years. We know that food-related illnesses doubled. We know that gastrointestinal problems, reproductive disorders, food allergies, autism all went on the rise since GMOs were introduced. This is correlational. It doesn't mean that it's causal, but it doesn't mean that it's not. And so we don't have sufficient research going on to say, yes, the rodents that ate GM soy, for example, they had smaller babies, fewer babies, 50% death rate among the babies. They had damage to their testicles, damage to their young sperm cells, changes in the uterus and ovaries. The DNA functioned differently in the embryo offspring. But we can't say for sure, because the follow-up research has not been done, what the mechanism is that caused that. But organizations like the American Association or American Academy for Environmental Medicine say, we don't have to wait. There are enough studies have been done to show that there is sufficient evidence of harm to say no one should be eating GMOs.
Well, yeah, and what about the precautionary principle that we should? I mean, come on, you're playing God, so to speak, with the seeds here. I mean, the GMO companies are, and unleashing that upon the world and letting the public eat it. I mean, it's in a way we are the lab animals. We are the experiment living in a giant laboratory of GMOs being run by the Monsantos and the DuPonts of the world and approved by the USDA. And they're all just waiting to see, I wonder what will happen. You know,
well, it's interesting, you know, people always talk about the guinea pig thing, but I say it's not like a normal experiment where you have an experimental group, a control group, and a measurement. This is an uncontrolled experiment. No one's measuring. And, you know, some of the Japanese say they're looking at the American children and seeing what happens with them eating GMOs for 10 years before they decide to take it. And what have we seen with the American children? Just, it's a disaster out there. Now, coming back to IRT for a second, we've touched just now pretty rapid pace on some of the health dangers. I typically, in my lectures, I take more time. If you go to responsibletechnology.org and you go to the resource tab and videos, you can catch a video of me giving a full-length presentation called Everything You Have to Know About Dangerous Genetically Modified Foods. So when I give a presentation like that, this is interesting, tying the research into activism, tying it up together. I ask the audience at the beginning, and I edited it out of this video that you'll see online, but you trust me, it was there. I say, rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you've been at avoiding GMOs in the last couple of weeks. All right, so 1 is low vigilance, 100 is high vigilance. Most people are 1 to 20 low vigilance. How many here are 1 to 20, 20 to 40, 40 to 60, the hands go up. And you see that in that, most people that I speak to in the country are not particularly vigilant. Then I give a talk for ranging from 10 minutes to an hour to an hour and a half. And at the end of the description of the health dangers, I say, now rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you want to be next week. Now, how many people are low vigilance, 1 to 20? No hands go up.
Right.
None. 20 to 40, no hands go up. Maybe one hand peaks up. Most everyone is 50% or 50 or above after the talk. And then I point out, I say, you know, all it took in the last 25 minutes was to hear the truth about GMOs, and this became a turning point in your digestive life. In other words, you've been willing to throw away brands that you grew up with in just one evening of being told the truth about GMOs. Now, if all we need is 5% of U.S. shoppers to avoid GM ingredients, we think, is that possible? Well, certainly it's possible for people to avoid GMOs because we have the non-GMO shopping guide at nongmoshoppingguide.com and the iPhone application Shop No GMO. So people can avoid them if they want. And most people say they want to avoid them, but the motivation generally isn't high enough for action. But now that people heard it, they want to change their diet. So if we're looking for 5%, 15 million Americans, and we know that this group just changes diet in 30 minutes, we have the formula and we have the proof that the formula works. We just need to take this message and package it and distribute it to a large enough number of people so we get our tipping point numbers, whether it's 5%, 6%, 3%. And so this tells the audience that we really know what to say and what to do to get rid of GMOs, and it becomes absolutely palpable. It becomes just around the corner. And in this case, truthfully, honestly, and in the most practical standpoint, it's just a matter of money. It's just a matter of having enough resources to get the same message that we say in person out on the airwaves, to get it out on the radio, on the TV, in print, in materials, to train people. It's just a numbers game, and that just comes down to resources.
Well, that's why your efforts are so important, Jeffrey, because as you mentioned, we are only bits of knowledge away, or in other words, this is an awareness exercise, and we're only just bits of knowledge away from total victory in this case. That's why the IRT's actions are so important, and friends, that's why your financial support for the IRT is simultaneously crucial. So please consider one more time, if you haven't already gone to that website, responsibletechnology.org/friends, and if you haven't already made a donation there, please consider doing so now and support the efforts of this outstanding organization, this fearless leader, Jeffrey Smith. And remember that we will match your donation up to $15,000 total dollars coming out of naturalnews.com, out of our general budget. That's money that we've acquired from advertisers, basically, because that's how we're financially supported. And that money will go to a just crucial project that can help us achieve victory. Now, Jeffrey, we are out of time on this, but I really want to thank you for sharing your time with us today. And I want to keep in touch with you here to find out about what how much money we can help you raise, and then to have more updates from you over the following 12 months about milestones of victory that we can achieve here.
Let's do that. Let's get together regularly and report on what this is, because this is a historic time. This is the time we're going to be kicking GMOs out. We can all put on our collective resume, ended genetic engineering of the food supply 2011 and 12. We should all know and celebrate the success. So thank you. Let's do that.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan. All right, friends, thank you for listening. And Jeffrey, thank you for your time. Folks, once more, it is responsibletechnology.org/friends. And we are supporting them too, by the way. This is one of the most important focuses for financial resources today. So thank you, everybody, for your time and for your support. And thank you, Jeffrey. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.